in our today's session, we would see the further chapters of Gita, the fourth and the fifth chapter of Gita. Till now, we saw that in the first chapter, how Arjuna was lamenting on the consequences of the war and was so depressed that he did not want to fight. And then in the second chapter, when he completely surrenders himself to God as a disciple, that now whatever you guide me, I would follow accordingly. With such a surrender attitude, God starts giving him the wisdom, and the first and foremost wisdom that he got was of the soul. That the soul is an eternal entity, immortal entity, indivisible, with so much of potential, where if he stabilizes in his swadharma and starts performing his actions, he need not worry, as he will be victorious. He will have victory upon all the evil tendencies. Further, God tells him how when he would perform his actions on the basis of his swadharma, which are the seven core values, then each and action, every action will also be so powerful that there are no means which can destroy the fruit of the action, nor the seed of the action. And he need not worry, because the fruit is going to follow like a shadow. But how he should be, having a balanced mind and intellect, and have the yoga so that there is efficiency in whatever he does. But the only thing he has to be cautious about is the company that he keeps, so that he does not get influenced by the company and deviate from his path of swadharma. After that, the signs of a stable intellect, a person with a sthit pragya, that was described by God, how when a person is detached like a tortoise, who knows how to wind up and completely become introvert, then he becomes stable from within. And whenever there are such upheavals in life, the need for us is to be detached. The more we are able to master our senses, the more strength we start gaining from within. And this is how he sums up the second chapter, that when a person is self-cultured, self-disciplined, then he is able to progress fast in his spiritual endeavors. Chapter then, God talks about how Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga can be performed simultaneously. When Arjuna asked this question, which is elevated, the path of knowledge or the path of action? And God describes that even in the path of knowledge, action is a must. Actions have to be performed. There is no time when we can say, yes, we can be away from action. But each and every action that is performed with a proper understanding, with proper wisdom, that is the highest path. And then there are further questions which Arjuna has in his mind. Who inspires human beings towards the path of sin? Why do they take up this path of sin? The answer to that question also God beautifully answers, that when the vices are there, when the vices start influencing the human mind, they start committing sins. And then he tells him how to master his mind. So Arjuna again asks a question, is it possible to master the mind, intellect and senses? And that is the time again when he says that the soul is all powerful. By stabilizing yourself in the consciousness of soul, take over the intellect. And then channelize your energy through the intellect to master the mind. And on the basis of that, you are able to master your senses as well. So beautiful method was shown how we can master the mind, intellect and senses. Now in the fourth chapter, again there are various questions that arise in the mind of Arjuna. And in the fourth chapter, we find that Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga and Sannyas Yoga, the difference between all the three, and how we can perform all the three at one time. The task of the divine knowledge of the soul and supreme soul is to purify. Such knowledge is the fruit of Karma Yoga. In this chapter, God has narrated the ancient history of Gita, how Gita comes into existence, and how he has mentioned the wisdom of Gita before also. He has also preached the importance of his incarnation, which takes place the one who salvages all. From verse 1 to 18, the topic of the influence of God, the one with all attributes and Karma Yoga, the son of knowledge, Gyan Surya, speaks about this imperishable yoga to the helpless human beings, which in Gita is mentioned as Vivashvan Vyakti, to the helpless human beings at the beginning of the world cycle. From verse 19 to 23, the conduct of yogis, great souls and their praise is sung. From verse 24 to verse 32, the description of the various types of sacrificial fires together with its attainments. And from verse 33 to 42, the praise of knowledge is given to Arjuna. And in the beginning when he says, Arjuna asks, have you ever given this knowledge before you gave to me to anybody else? So God says, yes, in the beginning of the cycle, in the beginning of this world cycle, I narrated this imperishable yoga to Surya. Manu received the same Gita from Surya. Manu absorbed it within his memory. Then Ikshvak received it from Manu, through whom Raj Rishis came to know about it, but then it got lost in this most important time of Kali Yuga. So in Kali Yuga, the essence of Gita is lost. The Gita is there, but the spiritual significance is lost. This is what God Himself said in the fourth chapter to Arjuna. Now how can He give this knowledge to Surya? Surya symbolizes whom? Who is Surya? Each and every soul is a self-illuminated soul. We are all divine souls, form of light. So He said, in the beginning this imperishable yoga is given to the self-illuminated souls who became helpless. Because in the end of the cycle, people become helpless, characterless. And so they are living in the mercy of the crisis, without any sanskaras. So when human beings become helpless without sanskaras, the knowledge is received by the soul. The soul then passes it to the mind, Manu. Manu symbolizes the mind, Man. And from there it goes to the desires. Ikshvak means desires. Means it has to be, the desire has to be there to know and understand something very powerful. When the desires become strong, they develop into sanskaras. So gradually it is coming down within our lives. And gradually it reaches to the behavior level. But at that stage, human beings become so desperate to experience the fruits, so they cannot wait to perform, and after that they will receive the fruit. So when they become desperate, instead of following the path of Gita, what they do is they start taking the supports of occult powers. So at this stage the occult powers come into existence, and due to the influence of occult powers, the knowledge of yoga vanishes away. It is gone forever. Nobody remembers it. So beautifully God has explained, but by taking the names in such a way that the spiritual significance was not followed. Then He explains how the Sadguru Himself comes to become the support of human beings. So when Sadguru Supreme Soul is dependent on His dear devotee souls, He becomes their charioteer. That is why Arjun's chariot is shown with 5 horses. This body is a chariot. When a person dies, and when the body is being taken, we always say the arthi is going. Arathi. The charioteer is not there and the empty chariot is going. So this body is a chariot with 5 horses, the 5 sense organs. And the soul is Arjuna, who wants to learn, who wants to understand the knowledge. So he becomes the charioteer. That is why when God descends in that chariot and becomes the charioteer, wherever and however they are, and describes to them about the elevated, imperishable, significant yoga, gives this knowledge of yoga. And when they become unstable, He gives them the support, then only they are able to keep their mind under control. Without God's support, it becomes difficult for us to keep the mind in control. The mind continuously becomes naughty, and becomes so naughty that it starts wandering here and there, and it becomes very difficult for people to control their mind. This is normally the complaints of people. What can we do? We want to remember God, but we are helpless. The mind wanders away and we cannot control the mind. How can we control the mind? So it is only when we get the support of the Supreme that we are able to control the mind with His help only. By stabilizing in the consciousness of being the child of the Supreme. When a child is naughty, nobody can control the child except the mother. The mother knows the technique to control the child. Similarly, when God also becomes our support, He teaches us how to control the mind. And then another question which Arjuna has, which many of us also have here. Arjuna asked God, "Are you born like others to preach this elevated significant yoga?" Many of us also have this question. Does God take birth? And will He take birth in this Kali Yuga also? So God says no. To take a form is different from taking a body. God's form descends. He does not take a birth like us children. He does not go to a womb of a mother. He does not have to go through the childhood. My birth is not visible with these eyes. I am beyond birth and death. A janma. I am beyond birth and death. Death cannot seize me. Subtle and eternal. I am subtle and eternal. I am indestructible. Beyond rebirth. Punarjanam rahit. Avyakt. Ajanma. I emerge with the power of yoga. I emerge myself on this world with the power of yoga. By bringing nature under my control. I do not have to go through nature. I bring nature also under my control with my power of yoga. The birth of my form is not the form of an oval shape. I emerge with yoga power by bringing all the three gunas of nature under my control. Very beautifully he has mentioned the secret of his birth on this world. And therefore, we can see all the divine incarnations who had taken birth through a mother's womb. God and the divine beings are separate. Today in our morning session, we saw the complete introduction of who the Supreme is. Who He is and how He is worshipped throughout the world. In all the different religions as one. And how He is able to master the three gunas of nature as well. That is what we call as Jyotirlingam. Jyotirlingam is self-created. Swayambhu. Shiva Shambhu, that is what the word goes together. That Shiva himself is self-created. Nobody creates Shiva. All other divine beings also have parents. Come through birth. Go through the three stages. Childhood, youth and adult. But it is only one Supreme who is self-created and who does not go through the various stages of life. Shiva Shambhu is worshipped throughout the world in all the major religions and is universally accepted by all, whom we call as Jyotirlingam. The Muslims say Noor-e-Ilahi. Noor means light. Self-illuminated light, which is so powerful, whom Christians term as light, Jehovah, the supreme light, whom the Jainis say as Siddha Shilapati, whom the Buddhists say as Chinkon Shekhi, and whom the Parsis term as the holy fire. So he is universally accepted by all the religions in form of light. And at that time, Arjuna has another question. When he says, I cannot be seen through this physical eyes, I am beyond birth and death and rebirth, then he says, when and in which situation do you emerge on this world? He did not say when and in which situation did you take birth. When did you emerge? Emerge means when he is Swayambhu, then he just incarnates. So when did he emerge? So that is when God says, Yada yadahi dharmasya glanir bhavat bharat. When the heart is filled with strong dislike for the highest religion and supreme soul, when irreligiousness increases in the world, it is at those times that I create my form and incarnate myself. Here incarnation does not mean rebirth, but reincarnation. And he says, what does he do? After incarnating, coming to this world, emerging on this world, what does he do? So he says, to let the wisdom, paritranayam sadhunam, to let the wisdom, distaste and divine sanskaras that bring one closer to the highest goal of the Supreme Soul flow without any obstruction. Let it flow smoothly in the world. And to destroy lust, anger, attachment, hatred and such vices through which wrong actions are performed. Sinful actions are performed because of the vices. When the influence of the vices increase, the sins are committed. So he wants to remove these vices. When the influence of virtues, values increase, that is when he is able to re-establish the most ancient and highest religion. And I emerge at every such age. So that is why he comes onto this world. Now here the word age means yuga, yuge, yuge. So here the word yuga does not mean at golden age, silver age, that is Satyuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapar Yuga, Kali Yuga, in every yuga. No. But when tamas guna, that is impurity, is in its extreme, there is enmity and objection in all four directions. When impurity is in full action and there is great amount of laziness, sleep, lethargy in human beings, when people are not able to perform their duty which they are aware of, and they are not able to free themselves from the action that are forbidden to do, I emerge in such an age where there is such an up and down of religion, where there is such upheavals of religion. That is why Duryodhana mentioned, I know what religion is, but I do not want to follow. I know what irreligiousness is. I know what adharma is, but I cannot practice. I know what religion is. I know what dharma is, but I cannot practice. I know what adharma is, but I cannot give up. So this is the condition of the world. Today in the world also people know what dharma is. Every human being knows what good is, what bad is. Everybody is aware of what dharma says. But, the big but, that we cannot practice. And everybody knows what adharma is. But, I cannot give up that adharma. So this is the condition, and that is the time when God has to emerge his form and give strength to those who are religious to follow the path of dharma and overcome the path of adharma, to become a true Pandav, one with a loveful intellect to God, and become victorious upon adharma. So this is what, when God comes to this world, and this is what he does, gives the strength to those who wish to follow dharma, the path of dharma. And there is another question in the mind of Arjuna, which we might also have. God says that my action, my karma, and my birth are divine. Mera janma aur karma divya hai. My birth and my action is divine and spiritual, which cannot be seen with this physical eyes. So then Arjuna says, then who can see and understand this? So he says, only those who become pure through knowledge, who knows how to purify themselves through knowledge and penance and tapasya, and are free from attachments, fear and anger, are able to see and have my divine vision. They only can see my real form. Only the ones who have had the vision of the soul, that is, only those who have had self-realization will understand my manifestation, that God incarnates in a particular loved one. Everybody cannot understand the divine incarnation, the secret of the divine incarnation of God. In order to understand that also, I need to have a pure mind. If it is filled of desires, attachments, fear, anger, impurity, it is impossible to have his divine vision, to understand the purpose of his incarnation on this world. And that is when human beings recite the shlokas of Gita, that's all, but not able to practice in their lives. And Gita does not mean just recitation of shlokas. Gita means the art of living. It teaches us how to live practical in this world of Kali Yuga. So this is how he explains one by one secrets of his being in this world. Further, he blesses Arjuna and says, hey Parth, those who worship me with intense love, when we remember God with love, I too give them that much cooperation. Those who love God, they experience the cooperation of God at every step. But those who challenge God, God moves away from them. Never gives them this experience of cooperation also. So those who remember me with intense love, I too give them that cooperation. The faith of the effort maker itself becomes mercy for himself. It is not that God only loves some. If he is the father, he should love all. God's love is for all the souls. But in order to experience God's love, the mind should be filled with love, so that I develop that worthiness to experience his love and cooperation. It is not that the parents do not love their children, but still some of the parents would compare themselves. My parents love my younger brother more than they love me. This is their complaints. Actually, the love of the parents is equal for everyone. But as much as the worthiness is, so much love is experienced by the child. Because the younger one may be more worthy, more obedient, following the advice of the parents, he experiences love. But one who goes against the advice of the parents, he is not able to experience the love. And he feels as if my parents are trying to dominate me. This is what their experience is. So here God's love is for each and every soul of this world, each and every creature of this world. There is no partiality in God's love. But we can experience on the basis of the faith and how much effort we make, the mercy is experienced, the cooperation is received. And further he says, those who follow according to what I say, they are able to empower divine sanskaras being within the human body. They can never be defeated, but they will always be successful. So this is how he blesses Arjuna's, that those who follow my path shall always be successful. Those who follow the advice of the Supreme are always successful in their efforts. And then he says, according to their karma, they get divided into the four communities. The creation of the four communities is based on their qualities. It is not that God has created Shudras. God has created Brahmins. No. Each and every soul is equal in the eyes of God. But according to the karma, they go into that category. They become Shudras, they become Brahmins, they become Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. So the creation of the four communities is based on their qualities and sanskaras. A person may have taken birth in a Brahmin community, but his actions, his qualities are like Shudras. Can we call him a Brahmin? No. According to the actions of the human beings, they get divided into those four parts. So this is also another secret that God has revealed. So no one should blame God. Why God has got me into this category? It is through the actions in the past life maybe that we went into that category. And then he explains the depth of the karma philosophy. Very beautifully he has said here, the understanding of karma is very deep. Hey Arjuna, it is necessary to understand what is karma. What is akarma? And what is vikarma? Because then alone you can liberate yourself from its bondage. Action, we can understand. But what is akarma? Neutral action. And what is vikarma? Sinful action. This is where sometimes we are not able to differentiate. And he explains, the human being who sees neutral action in action and action in neutral action is intelligent and a yogi. What do we understand by this line? Jo akarma mein karma aur karma mein akarma ko dekhta hai, vah yogi buddhivan hai. So how can we become such intelligent? And what does this line actually mean? I'll just try to illustrate on the basis of an illustration. I have a seed of, say, a mango fruit. I sow the seed. This is the action. The action is I sow the seed. From that seed, it germinates and gradually it starts growing. I sustain it. This is my action. As it comes out into a tree, then the time comes for the fruits. So on the mango tree, the fruits start coming. And the fruits are also sustained and protected by me. That is also my action. When the fruits are ripe, I pluck that fruit and I eat. That is also a karma. Sowing a seed is also karma. eating the fruit is also a karma. Is there any difference between the karma? Sowing a seed is also done by me. Eating the fruit is also done by me. Is there any difference between the two karmas? What would you say? Is there a difference? Yes? No? No difference? Yes, there is a difference. Sowing a seed is a very powerful karma. Because of that karma, the tree comes out, and one seed was so powerful, which I sowed, that bears 1,000 fruits during the whole season. But plucking the fruit and eating the fruit does not give me another fruit. I just get the satisfaction and that is over. That karma is over. Sowing the seed was such a powerful karma which gave me 1,000 fruits. But eating the fruit does not give me another fruit until and unless I sow that seed again. If I eat it and throw it away in the dustbin, I do not get any fruits. Satisfaction and that is finished. So, an intelligent person, what he will do? That he will see a neutral action in an action. So, sowing the seed is an action, eating the fruit is a neutral action. It is over, neutralize is there, finish is there. But in that neutral action, the yogi, the intelligent person sees another action. Let me sow this seed as well and get another 1,000 fruits. He is intelligent. He is a yogi. But the one who just eats and throws it away in the dustbin is not intelligent. So, an intelligent yogi sees action in neutral actions also. So, this is why God says that karma philosophy is very deep. A human being who sees neutral action in action, an action in a neutral action, is intelligent and a yogi. His actions can never be faulty. There can never be a mistake because everything is well planned. As he renounces his desire at the start of the action and at the time of the fruit, he is not dependent on the worldly objects. He is having the full faith. When I have performed this karma, I am definitely going to reap the fruits of this action. There is no doubt about it. But if the karma is powerful, I get powerful fruits. I get healthy fruits. But if the action, sowing the seed of a rotten seed, if I sow rotten seed, the fruits also may be such. They cannot be healthy. So similarly, when a yogi sows a seed, does a karma with full faith, with the love of God, does not do that karma with a desire, because otherwise the category of the karma becomes less, becomes degraded. So when he renounces, he knows that he is going to get the fruit, he does not worry about it. Does not even have a second thought. I don't know whether I'll get the fruit of this action or not. And he doesn't do that karma because of the fruits, because he is so much confident in his own self. So he renounces the desire at the beginning only, and in a neutral way he does that action. And he is not dependent at the time of fruits also, because he knows that seed was so powerful, I get 1,000 fruits. And that also not 1 year, every year I'll be getting 1,000 fruits. That is the confidence that he has. So similarly, if I perform such action, when I get the fruits every year, that is intelligence. If I am able to reap the fruits of the action every year, then that is worthy of sowing the seed. So he is contented in God's remembrance. And when he has done that karma in God's remembrance, it is really going to be powerful. So he is not dependent on the worldly objects, and he is always contented in God's remembrance. He is able to burn his sins with the fire of knowledge, with proper understanding. When he does everything methodically, on the basis of true understanding, spiritual understanding, on the basis of wisdom, his sins also get burned. If there are any defects in that karma, if there are unknowingly some sins created on this karma, they also get burned. So this is how he can purify his karma. That is the depth of karma which we receive. Maybe in this birth and all the births, such powerful karma. Not just in one birth, but in every birth we receive. Just as we receive the fruits every year, the karma is so powerful that we receive the fruits every birth. That is the depth of karma philosophy. And one who has mastered the senses and heart, one who is free from greed, is able to save himself from the bondage of action. Karma bandhan is not able to bind in the bondage while performing bodily related activities also. So the only thing is, we need to know the technique of mastering the senses and the heart and be free from greed and save ourselves from the bondage of karma. Karma bandhan se apne aap ko bachate raho. Then whatever karma is performed, bodily related activities also, that will also give us good fruits. His all previous sinful actions, they get burnt. When he is beyond jealousy, there is one beautiful thing. Many a times people come to us and ask. We do not get jealous about anyone. We have a big heart. We have good wishes in our heart for everyone. But when we are progressing, why do others get jealous about us? And what should we do when people get jealous about us? It reminds me of a beautiful illustration here as well. That when people get jealous about me, what will they do? They will try to pull my legs. They would not like me to progress, so they may say something bad about me. That's what they can do, nothing else. In that jealousy, isn't it? But why should I worry for that also? When I have done a karma, when I perform an action, each and every karma has deposited some fortune. Bhagya is attached to that karma. When I have performed a karma, my bhagya is attached to that karma. Now, when people get jealous about me, and if they start speaking ill about me, can they change my bhagya, which I have created on the basis of my own karma? Nobody can ever snatch away my bhagya, which is performed by me, my own karmas. So why should I worry about it? But my bhagya can always be snatched away when I listen to what they are saying and I start generating negative thoughts and I start performing negative karma. That negative karma can snatch away that bhagya. But other people saying ill about me can never snatch away that bhagya. So don't worry. And don't start generating negative thoughts. And don't start creating something or other negative accounts. Because remember this secret, it is only me and my karma, who can wash off that bhagya permanently? Nobody else's strength is there to snatch away my bhagya, which is created on the basis of my karma. So I need not worry. Why should I worry? When I am performing a good karma, the bhagya is attached with that karma. Now if somebody is speaking ill about me, can they snatch that bhagya from me? Never. It is only I who can wipe out that bhagya permanently by my own karma. And actually at that time when people start speaking ill about me, when I listen to that, I generate negative thoughts. And in that generation of negative thoughts, I start performing something wrong. And that is why the bhagya is gone. So it is not because of they are jealous that the bhagya is gone. It is because I turned my attitude and I was the one who performed such karma, who wiped away. So whenever anybody speaks ill about it, don't generate negative thoughts. On the contrary, give them good wishes and your bhagya will always be there. Nobody's strength is there, no human strength. Not even God Himself, not even God Himself can snatch away that bhagya from me. Never. That is the secret. Because it is created by my own karma. So even God cannot interfere with my karmas, with my bhagya. So don't worry about people who are jealous. But don't just get jealous about them. This is a wonderful insight that we get from Gita. Don't be jealous about others because you are not able to change their roles. You are not able to change their bhagyas. But when others are jealous, don't worry also. Laugh on the contrary of their ignorance. How ignorant these people are. Who wants to take away my bhagya, which is created by my own karma? And how is it possible? It is never possible. So, he says, when he is beyond jealousy, away from the confusion, balanced in victory and defeat, free from the influence of bad company, liberated from ego, his intellect is stable with knowledge, and is always a contented soul, as he performs the action only for the yajna. So these are the qualifications of that intelligent soul who realizes the depth of karma and keeps himself free from such weaknesses and remains a contented soul instead of worrying and performs action only for purification process. Action only for yajna. Yajna is the only process where purification takes place. So such actions which purify the self, such actions are performed. Then he further says, Arjuna asks another question. Which is the highest yajna amongst all the yajnas? There are so many yajnas. Jnana yajna, karma yajna. So he says, which is the most elevated sacrificial fire amongst all the yajnas? So God says, hey Arjuna, jnana yajna is the most elevated amongst all the yajnas and is beneficial of all because great sinful souls too have crossed the worldly ocean in this boat of knowledge. Jnana yajna. That yajna which is done out of proper understanding, that yajna which is done out of wisdom, that yajna is the most elevated yajna because there is no blind faith in it. And is beneficial of all because even sinful souls, they have crossed this worldly ocean, sansara sagar. They have crossed this sansara sagar in the boat of knowledge. Just as fire burns all rubbish, similarly knowledge destroys all sinful actions. Wisdom has that power. Spiritual knowledge has the power to destroy all the sinful actions. The soul will become pure and clean by creating a strong stage of knowledge and yoga, by finishing attractions and attachments with all sinful actions, material objects and the means. So this is how we are able to purify ourselves. We go through the purification process through knowledge, through proper understanding. The first of all thing we are able to finish off the ignorance. So the light is there, which shows us the path very clear. And then we are able to finish off all those attractions and attachments which are binding us in bondage. And this is how nothing can stop us from progressing. And we get elevated when we are able to cross this worldly ocean also in this boat of wisdom. And then in the end of fourth chapter, again he shows the qualifications or the qualities of such a yogi soul. And he says, the one who has gained control over his senses, won over his passions, do not have attraction towards material and means, and has faith in God, attains the extreme height of knowledge. He moves forward in his efforts on the path of knowledge and attains the highest peace. The ones who lose their conscience, faith and create doubts, sanshay buddhi, those who become sanshay buddhi, corrupts the path of their efforts. Sanshay buddhi vinashyanti. So they get corrupted on the path of their efforts. They get deprived of the experience of the highest happiness. So, hey Dhananjay, you will be liberated from all types of bondages if you perform actions willing with feelings of equality, surrender towards the Supreme, and through the method of Karma Yoga, and destroy the doubt that is being created by using the sword of wisdom. In the world also, some people, when they become shakki, doubtful, there is no medicine for it. Nobody can treat them. Nobody can make them understand that whatever you are thinking is wrong. And in the process of all that doubts, they destroy themselves, they destroy their family. They destroy their relationships and they are left alone. People leave their company. Oh, he is very sanki. He is very shakki. He is very doubtful. Each and everything we do is doubtful about it. And we can see such people and how they lose their families and they become alone. Nobody can help them. Because even somebody who has good wishes and wants to help them, for them also they start creating doubts. So they destroy themselves. That's why God said to Arjuna, do not ever doubt. Do not create doubt, but become a one with a faithful intellect. Therefore he says, nishchay buddhi vijayanti, sanshay buddhi vinashyanti. You ultimately destroy your own self in doubting. I don't know what will happen. Similarly, in the path of knowledge also, people sometimes doubt, what if I do this, what if I do that, and they are not able to do anything. What will happen? What will the fruits be if I do this and if I do that? They get nothing. They achieve nothing in such doubtful situations. So, then in the fifth chapter, which is on sannyas yoga, a knowledgeful soul externally performs all actions, but internally, as he becomes pure, due to the fire of knowledge, he attains peace, detachment, tolerance, spiritual vision, and bliss by renouncing the fruit of all those actions. What is renunciation? What is sannyas? That is clarified by the Supreme. From verse 1 to 6, The difference between the yoga of renunciation, sannyas yoga, and karma yoga, how selfless karma yoga is elevated. From verse 7 to verse 12, the characteristics of sannyas yoga and karma yoga and their praise. How both of them are not different but one. From verse 13 to verse 26, the topic of jnana yoga, yoga of knowledge. And from verse 27 to 29, the description of dhyana yoga. Again, he enters into another dimension from sannyas yoga to dhyana yoga, meditation along with bhakti. So in the beginning, the question is of Arjuna, which is elevated, sannyas yoga or karma yoga? Which yoga should I follow? Should I follow the path of renunciation, leaving everything and going to the jungles to do tapasya? Or should I follow the path of karma yoga, which is elevated for me? Explain me that. And beautifully God has answered his question. Both sannyas yoga and karma yoga are elevated. Both are elevated. How? Because the one who performs actions and does not have hatred towards others. So what do I have to renounce? I do not have to renounce the karma. I have to renounce the weaknesses in that karma. Renouncing the hatred towards anyone and does not aspire for any fruit of his action, then he is always worthy to be known as a renunciate, as a sannyasi. It is not the action. It is not the action that we have to renounce, but it is the attitude behind the action. With which attitude we are performing that action. The action may be elevated, but if we have a doubtful intellect, that attitude is wrong. So renounce that attitude of weakness. So he says, it is not the action, but the attitude behind the action that binds or liberates the person. The renunciation of duty or action is not renunciation. Giving up our duties, giving up activities, that is not renunciation. And going to the jungle, that is not sannyas. Renunciation is to let go of hatred, enmity, greed, desires in that action. I have to give up these weaknesses. That is real selfless karma yoga. That is sannyas yoga and karma yoga. And he further explains, renunciation cannot be attained without karma yoga. Sannyas cannot be attained without karma yoga. The one who has gained victory over his senses by being the embodiment of yoga, purity, and while seeing all living beings as souls, not the bodies and getting attracted to the bodies, but seeing each and every individual as a soul, such pure vision when we develop, his mind is within his control. He understands himself to be distinct from the senses. I am not the senses. I am not this hand. I am not these legs. I am not this head. I am not this mouth. I am the controller of the senses. So developing that attitude of mastery, I am the master of the senses. So who understands himself to be distinct from the senses while performing actions through them. Just as in the world, if I have a knife in my hand, will the knife decide whether it wants to cut vegetables or it wants to kill somebody? The knife does not have the sense. The knife does not have the intellect to decide. Similarly, the hand which is using that knife, does this hand decide whether I want to cut vegetables or whether I want to kill somebody? The hand also not decides. The decision maker is the soul, the Atma. So realizing that I, the Atma, is the master of the senses. Just as we can distinctly differentiate ourselves from the knife, similarly, can I differentiate distinctly from the senses? I am not the senses. I am the controller of these senses. I can use these senses as I want. Just as when a person knows how to use that knife, and if his attitude is accurate, he would not use that knife to kill somebody. He would use the knife for its purpose, for which it is made, to cut vegetables. Similarly, if I understand myself to be the master and I know the purpose of this hand, I will use this hand with its right purpose. So this is self-mastery. And then the mind also comes within control. So to understand himself to be distinct from the senses while performing actions through them, the one who carries out his duties in a detached manner, this is how we can detach ourselves from the hand, from the eyes, from the mouth, and surrenders all the fruits of his action to God, remains free from the bondage of karma while performing karma also. Then that karma will not bind me into bondage. Just like the illustration is given so beautifully, God also gives some beautiful illustrations in Gita. And he says, just as a lotus always stays above the water, similarly all the actions of a karma yogi are for the purification of the soul. And while staying in the body, with 9 doors, it has the authority over his mind, intellect and sanskaras, by which he experiences highest peace and happiness. The real peace is experienced only then. So we do not have to renounce action. We do not have to renounce our duties. We do not have to renounce our responsibilities. But the attitude behind that, and remain like a lotus. So beautifully he's illustrated. Another very important point that he stresses here, and many of us here do not have this wisdom also, God very clearly states in Gita's 5th chapter, God neither creates the feelings of being the doer in man, nor creates actions. भगवान कर्तापन को नहीं रचता, न कर्म को रचता है, और द अटेनमेंट ऑफ द फ्रूट ऑफ दैट एक्शन, न कर्म के फल को रचता है. यू आर रिस्पॉन्सिबल फॉर ऑल द थ्री. यू आर रिस्पॉन्सिबल टू बी द डूअर, यू आर रिस्पॉन्सिबल फॉर क्रिएटिंग दैट एक्शन, एंड यू आर रिस्पॉन्सिबल फॉर एक्सपीरियंसिंग द फ्रूट ऑफ दैट एक्शन. कर्तापन कर्म और कर्म का फल भगवान नहीं रचता है. गॉड इज सेपरेट. सो ही सेज गॉड नाइदर क्रिएट्स द फीलिंग्स ऑफ बीइंग द डूअर इन द मैन, नॉर क्रिएट्स द एक्शन, नॉर द अटेनमेंट ऑफ द फ्रूट्स ऑफ द एक्शन, बट हिज बिहेवियर इज अकॉर्डिंग टू द प्रेशर्स एंड इन्फ्लुएंसेस ऑफ द नेचर ऑन हिम. मनुष्य में कर्तापन को कौन रचता है? बाहर के प्रेशर्स और बाहर का इन्फ्लुएंस, प्रभाव, कि किसके प्रभाव में आकर हम कर्म कर रहे हैं. सो द इन्फ्लुएंसेस ऑफ नेचर, द इन्फ्लुएंस ऑफ पीपल, द प्रेशर ऑफ द वर्क, दैट क्रिएट्स दैट एक्शन. नॉर्मली वी बिलीव that everything that moves in this world is moving because of God's desire. This is what we have heard normally from saints and sadhus, saying that even if this hand moves, if this hand raises, it is because of God's desire that the hand has raised. Now just imagine, if I raise this hand and slap somebody, can I say it is the desire of God to slap that person? That was my desire. And therefore, I have to experience the fruit of that action. That person will slap me again. It is not God's desire. That's why very clearly He stated, He does not create the action. He does not create the feelings of being the doer in the action. And He does not create the attainment of the fruit of the action. For every activity, we are responsible. God is not responsible. So don't ever think that without God's desire, even the leaf cannot move. Nature is there to take care of that. If God will go on doing these small things, when will He do the great task of the world? He has assigned those tasks. Moving of the leaves, He has assigned to nature. I do not have to worry about it. When the hand raises, it is not with the God's desire. He has given the freedom to each and every soul to perform. He has given the wisdom. What is right, what is wrong, and according to that understanding, you know how to do your actions. You know what you should be doing. So we are responsible for each and every action of ours. That is why we are given this title. When a person does sinful action, he is termed as Papatma. We never say Pap Paramatma, Pap Atma. When a person is doing a charitable action, we say Punya Atma. We never say Punya Paramatma. We are responsible. So we have to experience the fruit of those actions also. God is not responsible for the actions. So whatever I am doing in this world, I have to experience the fruit of its action. I cannot get away from the fruits. So don't ever think, oh, whatever is happening in this world, without God's desire, nothing happens. No, everything is happening because we have desire. And so we are responsible. Just as in a family, if I just illustrate this, in a family, there is a child. When he is small, yes, he will move according to his parents' advice. If the parents say get up, he will get up. If he say sit down, he sits down. But after he grows up and he gets the understanding, say when he is 13, 14 years of age or 16 years of age, will he move on the basis of what his parents desire? Whether he has to sit down or whether he has to stand up? No. Even if you tell the child, you do this, you do that, every time you start advising him at every step, what will he say? I have my sense. I have my common sense. I know what I should be doing. You don't need to guide me at each and every step. Don't do this, don't do that. Will he listen? Never. Even a child in this world does not listen. Every step if you are going to guide, don't do this, don't do that, do this, do this. No, he will not listen to you. He will say, I have my common sense and let me move according to what I understand. And that is why it is said, when a child becomes 16 years of age, he is no longer a child. The parents also have to become friend to that child. If they start instructing that child at every step, he will become frustrated. Similarly, we are also children of God. And if He would always start instructing, lift your hand, put down your hand, will we agree to Him? We will tell Him, why have you given us the intellect? Why have you given us the wisdom? If you are going to do everything, if I am going to follow what you say every moment, why have you given the information or why have you given us the intellect? And nobody would follow according to that. Many a time people say we are just like puppets. And as He is making us to dance, we are dancing. No, we are not puppets. He has given us the freedom. He has given us the wisdom. He has given us the intellect. And with that understanding in the intellect, you know what is right and what is wrong. You know what is good and what is bad. Now perform your actions accordingly and remember, whatever you will perform, you will have to reap for that action. Don't put the blame onto God. This is also cowardness. I do not have the strength to take up the responsibility myself. So don't blame God. And don't ever say that we are like puppets. No, we are not puppets. We are intelligent beings on this world. The most beautiful creation of God on this world. And so when He has given the wisdom, He has given the intellect, the intelligence, and He has given the freedom also. Now you know what is good, what is bad, what is worthy, what is unworthy, what is practical, what is not practical, and you are the master to take decisions for your own life. This is what, in the fifth chapter, God Himself has said to Arjuna, you will have to fight. I can guide you. If you want the guidance, till then, He also did not guide Arjuna. In the first chapter, when He went on speaking, and in the second chapter, when He surrendered Himself, now you guide me, then God started speaking. Till then, He was just a listener. He just listened to what He said. He did not interrupt in between also. But when He asked for advice, when He surrendered Himself, that is the time when God spoke. So, we come out of this illusion that God is doing everything. No, He is not doing. There is a company. And there is a managing director and the workers in the company. Yeah, as such it is said, the company is run by the managing director. But each and activity is performed by whom? By the workers. Similarly, yes, we can say the controller of this world, cosmos, is the supreme. But whatever is happening is done by human beings. And they have got that freedom to do, and they have got that intelligence also to do. So very clearly he explains in this fifth chapter, a bodily soul performs action according to his natural independent desire. Therefore he alone is responsible for it, and he alone enjoys the fruits of his deeds. God is not responsible for the charitable or sinful actions done by anyone. When the ignorance of human soul conceals his wisdom, then he gets entangled in the attachment, vices, and forgets his real identity and starts to think that God is responsible for my actions. Now this is the biggest ignorance. Just as everything becomes clear in sunlight, similarly through the wisdom of the soul, our ignorance is dispelled and all aspects are very clearly understood. So through the light of wisdom, now I should dispel this ignorance and take this charge in my hands and be responsible while performing each and every karma. This is what the wisdom of Gita tells us. And then he says, the sensual pleasures obtained through the senses have been the reason for your sorrow. It is not God who gives us sorrow. It is not God who gives us happiness. But our karmas, they give us the sorrow and the experience of happiness also. It depends on how we have performed that karma. So the sensual pleasures obtained through the senses have been the reason for the sorrow. From the beginning till the end, the one who tolerates the force of lust and anger and remains free from it is a powerful soul who knows how to control this viciousness. He is a powerful soul, a real yogi. He is able to stabilize his mind and intellect in God And he seeks his protection with a lot of faith. Yes, the moment we surrender ourselves with faith in God, then he helps us by giving us the right advice, by awakening our consciousness, by giving the light of wisdom. That is his task. Still, he would not interfere with my karma, because otherwise human beings always know how to put the blame onto others. This is what we have been taught since childhood. Put the blame onto others. Whatever happens, put the blame onto others. And this is how we have been always putting the blame onto the Supreme also. In the world also we find small children, when they learn to get up on their own legs, they take a support of a table or a chair and try to stand on their legs, seeing the elders. This is how they learn. And because they are not able to maintain the balance, what happens? They fall down. And as soon as they fall down, the first thing they do is they start crying. Self-protection. Because they know the mother would come and start scolding. Why did you want to get up? What if you would have got hurt? So there is no tear coming out. But the child would, as soon as he sees that the mother has seen him, he starts crying. If nobody has seen, he would not cry. So the first thing when he falls, he looks around. Is there anyone who has seen me? And if somebody has seen him, immediately he starts crying. No tear is coming out. So the mother would come running, and what would the mother say or the father say? It was not your fault. Son, it was not your fault. It is the fault of the table. The chair was such. So they hit the chair. And the child stops, thinking, now the blame has gone onto the chair. So I am not responsible. I am very good. So this is how we have got the sanskaras. Because from childhood our parents said, it is not your fault, it is the fault of this table. So the blame was put on the table. The blame was put on the chair. The blame was put on the floor sometimes. And this is how we have learned, whatever happens in life, put the blame onto somebody. And keep yourself protected. And if you find no one, put the blame onto God. God is responsible. This is how we have learned. We have never had the guts to take the responsibility on ourselves. There the child would cry without any tears. When we grow up, we put the blame onto someone, and if we find no one, what will we do? We start shouting. To hide our mistake, to hide our faults, we start shouting at others. It was because of this person. He's always doing like that, he's always like that, and we start shouting. So this shouting, people will be afraid and they would think, no, he's right, oh? He's not wrong because he's shouting. The other is like that. So they also take it for granted. And this way, we have never had the strength to face and take up the responsibility on ourselves. We have always tried to put the blame on somebody else. And when nobody was found, we put the blame onto God. He was responsible for this sorrow of mine. Why should I blame God? We are also binding ourselves in that karma. So, in Gita it is said, no one is responsible. You are responsible for your own actions, for your own sorrows, for your own happiness. And he is able to stabilize his mind and intellect in God and seeks his protection with a lot of faith. The one who has faith seeks his protection, takes his help, takes his guidance, takes the wisdom, brings the spiritual awakening, and then he has equanimity in his vision towards all. Thus he is able to live in this world liberated from attachment and doubt. He is able to experience infinite happiness through the concentration of the mind. And he is able to overcome all the weaknesses also. And this is how he is able to progress in his spiritual efforts. And then he says, the one who is liberated from desires and anger, a soul with complete controlling power, who does not have any doubt in his mind, such a knowledgeful soul, the one who is introverted and remains happy for all the time, is an accomplished soul, liberated in life while being in this world by destroying all his souls. He becomes Jivan Mukta. It reminds me of that story of Janak. That when Janak wanted to know the knowledge of what Jivan Mukti is, he calls all his wise people and gathers them in the court and puts this question in front of them. Can you give me the knowledge of Jivan Mukti? What is Jivan Mukti? In one line or in a practical way, in 1 second. So many wise people from far and wide, they came in that court. Everybody got up to explain what Jivan Mukti is, what liberation within life is, and how to get this experience. But as soon as they started giving lectures, Janak said, I don't want any lecture. I want a practical illustration maybe, where I can understand what Jivan Mukti means. And that is the time, it is said, when Ashtavakar comes. The one with all the 8 limbs crooked. So when he gets up, people laugh at him. And so Ashtavakar said to King Janak, I thought your court was of the wise people, but today I find they are all chamars, the one who looks at the skin every day. They did not see the soul, how elevated the soul may be. So they all felt hurt, but they became quiet and realized that this is some person with full wisdom. So then he said to Janak, well, you want some practical illustration, so I would not give you the wisdom now. But when my time would come, I would practically illustrate you what Jivan Mukti is. So the court was dispersed, and King Janak also went his way, and he wanted to go out for hunting into the jungles. So he asked for his horse. So when the horse comes, one leg is on the saddle and the other leg is on the ground. Still he was getting ready to climb the horse. From far off an Ashtavakar saw, he calls out to Janak, Janak, stay as you are and tell me, where are you at this time? Janak was surprised. Being on the ground, I am not on the ground. Being on the horse, I am not on the horse. So he said, this is the wisdom of Jivan Mukti. This is the stage of Jivan Mukti. He did not understand, how can this be the stage of Jivan Mukti? So then Ashtavakar said, just as while you are on the ground, still you are not on the ground. While being on the horse, you are still not on the horse. Similarly, when you lead the life, being in the world, be above the worldly pleasures. Be above the vices. Be above the weaknesses. Be above the evils. And you will experience what Jivan Mukti is. You do not have to run away from life. But while leading that life, beyond the weaknesses, beyond the vices, you will experience real freedom. You will experience real liberation. And that is liberation within life. Jeevan mein rehte hue mukti. It is not that I run away from life, I run away from my household, I run away from my responsibilities, and then I say I am Jeevan mukt. No. If you do not appear the exams, how can you claim yourself to have passed the exams? But while being in the world, while going through all the situations, and while going through all the situations and circumstances, and still, if you can remain above, that is true liberation within life. That is the experience. So this is what he got, the wisdom. And therefore, Janak was known to be the most wise person, who always functioned, looked after the kingdom also, but had constant wisdom in it. And then he clarifies the aspect of Dhyana Yoga. And he says, hey Arjun, do not think about the external scenes and subjects, and stabilize your inner eye in the middle of your forehead. Prakriti, as I have been saying, this is the surface marking where the soul resides. According to medical sciences, it's the hypothalamus and pituitary gland in between that, which is right behind this Prakriti. And that is why when we go to the temples, we apply the tilak here. Reminding the self that we have to stabilize ourselves in the soul conscious stage before offering our prayers. Here in brief, God says, silent your mind, concentrate your intellect towards God, and let your benevolent wishes flow towards all living beings to liberate them from all the worldly sorrows and attain the highest peace. Let us have this benevolent feelings for all. Every creature, whoever they are, whoever is going through the sorrow, let us help them with good vibrations so that they get the power to tolerate their sorrows, to overcome the pain. And when such good wishes are released, it gives us also inner peace and happiness. This is the most benevolent action we can do. We cannot take away their sorrows, because it is on the basis of their karmas that they have performed. But at least we can give them that strength to bear that pain and sorrow. That is a very benevolent act that we can do for the worldly people. We may not be able to remove them completely, but at least give them some power to tolerate, to face, to enable them that courage to go through it. This is what everybody needs. And as it is said, for that, do not see the external scenes. It reminds me of another story of King Janak. That one day a sannyasi came up to King Janak and said, although I have renounced everything, but still I am not able to control my mind. What is the proof, what is the guarantee that by staying in all this materialistic comforts, still you have become videhi? You have conquered all everything and you are living a jivan mukta stage. How can I believe that? Because when I have renounced everything, still I am not able to concentrate. How can you concentrate? Can you demonstrate in some way or the other and give me the proof? This is what the sannyasi came and told Janak. So Janak just smiled and he said, actually, I am quite busy at this moment, but I would not let you go unanswered. I'll definitely give your answer. But till then, till I wind up my work and get myself free so that I can sit with you and have a good discussion, till then, if you can just go around, see my palace. On the other side, there are some beautiful monuments and nice things coming up. So can you go and see all that? The beautiful designs and the beautiful monuments that are being made. So the sannyasi said, okay, I don't mind. I'll go and see the palace and the beauty of the palace till you get free. So King Janak said, but one thing, remember, it is still under construction. So there is no facility of the lights. So you'll have to take a lamp with you. And with the help of the lamp, you can see. But remember, the windows and doors are also not fixed. And from that side, the direction of the wind is also coming. So you'll have to pay attention that the lamp does not go off. Because otherwise then everything will be dark and you won't be able to see anything. So the sannyasi says, don't mind. I'll take this lamp and just go and have a look of your palace. So he takes the lamp, and as he was guided, it was the wind direction side. So he has to be careful now that the wind will not put off the lamp. So after seeing everything, he comes back. Until then, King Janak was free from his responsibilities. So he says, now we can have a good chat. Both sat down. And the first question Janak asked was, so have you seen the palace? So he said, yes. How did you like it? So the sannyasi says, well, it was very beautiful. So then the third question King Janak says, where was your attention? The attention was on the lamp. Although he was seeing everything, but he was not attracted to those scenes, to that beautiful art and culture which was depicted. His attention was on the lamp. So Janak says, this is the secret of my being Jivan Mukta, that although I live in this materialistic comforts, but my attention is to purify the soul. And so when I am constantly soul conscious, these attractions, these materialistic comforts do not pull me. And this is how I can remain Jivan Mukta. And this is the secret of being in this world amongst all the materialistic comforts. Still we can remain aloof from it. This is the art of living. And when we live such a detached life, then we can easily conquer the senses, we can control the mind and allow that mind to concentrate on the Supreme. It's not difficult. The only thing we need to do is practice. But if I want to live in the mud, if I do not know how to remain above, if I do not know how to keep my attention on the soul, then never in your life will you be able to concentrate your mind. Never in your life will you be able to control your mind. It will always remain naughty forever. This is the right method, the technique to take control of the mind also. So this is what the basis of Dhyan Yoga. So he's prepared the ground for Dhyan Yoga. And tomorrow evening session in chapter 6 and 7, the detail of Dhyan Yoga is explained by God. So now for a few minutes, as Arjuna was directed, silent your mind. Do not allow the mind to wander in the external scenes, subjects, and stabilize your inner eye on the forehead. So as is shown by God himself, and then silent your mind. Concentrate the intellect on God and let the benevolent feelings just flow into the world. This is the first step of meditation. So can we do meditation now for a few minutes as it is shown by him? So just sit in a relaxed position, but don't sit in such a relaxed position that you fall asleep. We do not have to do Nidra Yoga, we have to do Raj Yoga, mastering your senses. So keep your body alert, but at the same time, relax. Sit upright, the back straight, keep your eyes open, focus your attention on the Supreme as demonstrated in the picture. How we focus our attention on the Supreme Being and allow those vibrations. As I said in the morning also, we do not have to beg from God, but just be receptive of receiving those vibrations and then let it spread into the world. So this is what the beginning of Raj Yoga is. And as I'll be giving you the thoughts, don't just repeat those thoughts. Try to go into the feelings, feel them. The more you can feel them, the more you can experience, the more you can enjoy meditation. So for a few moments, let us turn our attention away from the external world, the external scenes, and just focus within the center of the forehead. And with the inner eye, visualize yourself to be a point of light, a divine light. I am a conscient entity. The embodiment of light. Imperishable, indestructible, immortal being. Eternal entity. I am separate from this body. I am not this body. I am the master of the body. I am not the hands. I am not the head. I am the master of my hands. The master of my senses. I am distinct, separate. Slowly and gradually, we take the mind and intellect on a spiritual journey to the Supreme Abode, where there is divine light. As I travel on this spiritual journey with my mind and my thoughts, and with the inner eye, I visualize myself free from all the bondages of the physical body, free from all the burdens of the world. I am free. liberated. And I feel the lightness within. The more I feel the lightness, the more higher I go. And as I see myself in the Brahma element, my form is unique. I am a divine star, point of light. As I am a point of light, with my inner eye, I visualize my Supreme Father, who is also divine light, the eternal light, the supreme light, which is so powerful. Powerful than the 1,000 suns gathered together. Who is infinite in his qualities. As I sit in the canopy of the Supreme, I allow the rays of light and might shower upon me. I feel so fortunate being in the company of the Supreme. No worldly attraction can pull me. As I am in the highest company, as I focus my attention on the Supreme, I allow the rays to change my form, and I fill myself with divinity. As if I'm recharging my batteries, it is such a soothing feeling. My mind and intellect are getting relaxed. I feel so comfortable being with myself. It refreshes me from within. And I experience that inner happiness, the joy. And the bliss. I feel so secure in the company of the Supreme. As I am stabilized in soul conscious stage, dispel the ignorance which is there within me. And I receive the light of wisdom in which everything is so clear. My vision becomes clear. I empower myself with wisdom. How fortunate I am to experience God's love. And I realize God loves me so much. He fills me with all the divine qualities and transforms me. I love God, and God loves me. And I create that eternal bond with Him, in which I feel so protected, so safe, so secure. Slowly and gradually, I turn my attention to the physical world and allow those vibrations to flow onto the world. All those souls who are suffering from sorrow, I let the vibrations of God's love flow to them. I shower upon them God's grace. I allow these vibrations to flow naturally. I feel so happy within. It gives me such a benevolent feeling where I help in the true sense. I spread the vibrations of peace to those who are in tension and allow them to relax their minds. I spread the vibration of wisdom. To dispel the darkness of ignorance, I spread the vibrations of happiness. And inspire them to turn their attention towards the Supreme, who is the benefactor of all, who is the guiding light, who is the Savior, the purifier. Slowly and gradually, I bring my mind and intellect back to my physical body and take charge of my sense organs. Now I realize how to use the senses as instruments and not come under the influence of the senses, but be a master and use them and constantly remain in this Jivan Mukta stage. Om Shanti, Shanti.